Good morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Today is Monday, June 1st, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
The anti-tax rabble are at it again, this time led by none other than Grover Norquist himself, Prince of Darkness.
The Port of Astoria Commission has 3 more months to decide whether to renew a lease tied to a proposed liquefied natural gas terminal.
And women's health care provider George Tiller, Dr. George Tiller, was murdered while attending church yesterday.
It's reported to be cloudy today with a chance of thunderstorms and temperatures around 80. Tonight, partly cloudy and, so they say, scattered showers, temperatures in the 50s. And tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy.
We'll see.
Yeah.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Portland, of course, is a focal point for the locavore movement. A group of green entrepreneurs is taking it a step further. The Urban Farm Collective is celebrating its launch party with a lunch party at the Tin Shed on Alberta Street coming up this Wednesday. Here this morning to talk about the project is Drea Mancini, Urban Farm Collective founding member. Good morning, Drea.
Good morning. How are you?
Great, thanks. And thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
First off, tell us a bit about the Urban Farm Collective. How does it work?
Well, the basic idea behind it is that we're a group of people that are coming together to help each other grow food in our backyards. And when we have harvests, we're going to have all the produce pooled, and the Tin Shed is going to buy as much of that produce as possible for their menu. And then everything else is going to go to a public market where people can come and buy and barter for stuff that's grown super, super locally. And then everything that we make from any of that gets split collectively amongst all the members.
How did you get involved with this? Tell us a little bit about the genesis of the whole project.
Well, my business partner and I, Alyssa Hartman, she and I are good friends with Jeanette Caden, who's one of the owners of the Tin Shed, and we hang out all the time and talk about food politics and Michael Pollan's books and everything like that. And so we have always been brainstorming, and Jeanette came to us with an idea. She was like, you know, I think I really need to make my restaurant's food try to be a little bit more local. And as much as possible, I want my hands involved in that. And I have this idea. And Alyssa and I had been communicating with our friends about how we wish we could, you know, share our food. Everybody grows something different so that we can have a really wide variety and make it super local. So we just, in February, started brainstorming this idea, got it together, and started putting it out there that we wanted to make it a collective project and have everybody, you know, who's interested be a member. We want people of all skill levels and experience levels to be able to be involved and trade information and help each other out.
That's interesting that you use the term you wanted to do something with your hands. Larry Santoyo, this permaculture teacher, says it, never mind, forget about carbon footprints. It's more important to get your handprints on something, to just do something, no matter what the situation is, where you are, what you're doing, to just do something. That's the most important. Clearly, that's what you are up to. So tell us a little bit about what's happening on Wednesday.
Well, Wednesday's our kickoff party. We're going to have an open-air harvest market in the Tin Shed Garden Cafe starting this Wednesday. It's going to be every week from 4 to 7. And this Wednesday, it will be from 4 to 7 as well. We're going to have some really good live music, and there'll be some happy hour cocktails available, and some art for sale, as well as some of the local food that we've managed to muster by June 3rd. So, people should definitely come check it out, wander around. We're going to have an education table as well, and I think we'll have a map up that shows where all the local gardens are from, so people can find out more, see if they want to get involved, and make it part of their after-school routine.
Give us an idea again. Tell us where exactly the Tin Shed is.
Yeah, the Tin Shed is on the corner of Northeast Alberta and 14th.
And it's Wednesday between 4 and 6, you said?
Between 4 and 7.
4 and 7? Great. Yeah. Okay. And, of course, listeners, we'll have all that information at the front desk if you need it. Thank you so much. My guest today has been Drea Mancini, Urban Farm Collective founding member.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Drea.
The Port of Astoria Commission has 3 more months to decide whether to renew a lease tied to a proposed liquefied natural gas terminal after the state extended a deadline. The agency decided Thursday to grant a 3-month extension to give the port time to reappraise the property because zoning has changed since the lease was signed in 2004. The Astorian newspaper reported that most of the speakers at a public hearing were mainly concerned with stopping the LNG terminal development.
Yep, finally they're starting to listen. Recently, a boat being towed to Spokane, Washington from Lake Mead in Nevada was found to be infested with quagga and zebra mussels. These are invasive species that could foul waterways, clogging intake pipes, and damaging recreational equipment at staggering costs if the boats are launched with these things clinging to them. Okay, so that's Spokane, Washington, and Lake Mead, Nevada. But Oregon authorities say that they would have a hard time getting the money to deal with the kind of problems that these invasive species present. Mark Sisma, the director of the Center for Lakes and Reservoirs at Portland State University, says that if something like this incident happened in Oregon, there just wouldn't be the money to deal with it.
And also in Washington, the Ecology Department officials say that budget cuts to the state's litter fund will likely mean more trash on state highways and fewer youth hired this summer to pick it up. The state budget enacted earlier this month cut $4 million from litter pickup and prevention programs during the next 2 years to help close a $9 billion deficit. So the simple answer is, don't throw trash along the freeway.
Right, here we are again, clogging waterways and bunging up drain pipes. I guess we're really the invasive species after all. The Port of Newport hopes that Seattle's loss will be its gain. The Register Guard newspaper in Eugene reports that the port is making a bid to be the home to a new marine operations center for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. If Newport is chosen, it would move 6 research vessels and 17 private administrative jobs from Seattle and bring up to $19 million in economic benefits to the Oregon coast.
Portland's Bureau of Transportation is asking a consultant to ponder the costs associated with different ways people move themselves from point A to point B. This as the city tries to put an environmental price tag, sort of, on transportation projects' contribution to climate change and carbon emissions. City officials plan to spend about $35,000 on the project to evaluate and alter transportation work to reduce Portland's carbon footprint. Last week, the city began talking with 9 firms that submitted proposals for the project. But still, $35,000 doesn't buy a whole lot of consulting.
Right, and look how much stimulus money is buying a whole lot more freeways and road repair. Right. Greenwashed once again. Well, the question of logging is one that dogs legislators, environmentalists, and business leaders in Cascadia. The push to log, that read that as the clear cut, is on the minds of those who are fighting the pressure to cut the state's last stands of old-growth forests. The fact that we're even thinking about it is appalling. Here to consider this is Ivan Molesky, Sierra Club Conservation Director. Good morning, Ivan. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So really what it comes down to is the value of forests and whether they actually are worth more to people standing than cut and rolling down the freeways on the back of logging trucks. Can you talk a little bit about how trees are more valuable standing?
Well, you raise a great point. Forests in Oregon provide just an incredible array of values. You know, first of all, much of our drinking water here in Oregon derives off federal or state forest ownership. That's what also keeps our salmon runs healthy, our fishing industry going strong, our opportunities for recreation. There's incredible economic value associated with recreation and which people want to do in forests that are standing, not clear-cut. And one of the most important issues is carbon sequestration. Right here in the Pacific Northwest, our forests, and particularly the older forests that you find on state and federal lands, are sequestering tremendous amounts of carbon, and some of the most effective carbon storage systems on the planet. So, you know, there's recent research out of the Oregon State University School of Forestry that says that extending your rotation from 40 years to 100 years, meaning instead of cutting trees every 40 years like you see on a lot of private lands, perhaps letting them age to 100 years increases your carbon store.
And also possibly given 100 years, people will be smarter and realize maybe it's not a good idea to cut them at all.
Perhaps so, perhaps so.
It takes a while for these things to filter to sink in.
That's right, and unfortunately what we're dealing with right now is a couple things you hit on. The Oregon legislature is considering a bill that would, House Bill 3072, which would make timber production the primary use of our state forest lands, and by that I'm referring to the Tillamook and Clatsop State Forest just between Portland and the coast. You know, 500,000 acres of publicly owned forest, the state is literally thinking of making timber production the primary use. And this is being used, this piece of legislation, to influence Oregon's Board of Forestry, which is an appointed board. They're meeting this Wednesday to consider significant increases in logging on these state lands, just administratively.
That's House Bill 3072 you mentioned, right?
That's right. That's right.
This is something that I believe the public ought to be intensely and acutely aware of and follow very, very closely, because it affects us in so many ways. All of the points that you originally touched on, that could be lost if we allow this legislation to go through.
That's right. I mean, people who, you know, can remember this issue, remember that our, you know, our Tillamook and Clatsop State Forest went through a long process about a decade ago, charting out their future course of management. And ultimately, what was decided on was to try to find a balance of uses where you balance ecological with social with economic. Now, I would say, and many would say, that there's already too much logging on our state forests. Unfortunately, there are those that believe that there's not enough. And right now, they're pushing a piece of legislation which would scrap that sense of balance and in exchange for timber production the primary use of these forests. So it's a terrible time to be doing this. You mentioned the housing market. It's historic lows. Prices are at historic lows. The state forestry department is actually laying people off because they're not getting enough money for the timber sales that they are offering, and they're finding that timber companies don't even want the timber in some cases. So it's just a terrible time to be having this discussion. But
Ivan, thank you. We're running a bit short of time, but thank you so very much for that. We'd love to have you back as a guest again in the near future. We want to follow this very closely. It's House Bill 3072. Terrible, terrible piece of legislation. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Ivan Malusky, Sierra Club Conservation Director.
In the struggle over how to address climate change nationally and globally, forests play a major role. Cap-and-trade programs can include provisions for offsetting heat-trapping pollution by investing in woodlands. Sets are poised for explosive growth. In the next 2 years, California is expected to roll out a statewide carbon market that may be expanded to other western states. A new climate treaty scheduled to be signed in Copenhagen in December may allow industrial countries to offset emissions with forest-saving projects in Brazil, Indonesia, and other developing nations.
How about Oregon? I think we count as a developing nation at this point in American economic history. Several hundred anti-tax econo-terrorists gathered for a day-long conference in Salem on Friday to push a campaign to block tax hikes being proposed by the legislature. Grover Norquist was there, so you know that they're going to be fighting dirty. The state anti-tax activists want to force a statewide vote on any move by the Democratic-controlled legislature to raise income taxes for higher-income earners and corporations. Democrats say the increases would bring fairness to the state's tax code and help balance the state budget that's been hit by the recession. And, of course, the other side claims that although you may not be rich now, someday you might be, and then you'll thank them.
The Customs and Border Protection Agency expects most people are prepared to comply with today's new document requirements for U.S. citizens returning from Mexico and Canada. The new security rules for land and sea border crossings require U.S. citizens to show a passport card issued by the State Department, or enhanced driver's license, which uses a microchip to store a person's information. Some citizens also maybe use a trusted traveler document like a Nexus card.
We are almost out of time, but there are two final stories that we really need to get in very briefly. Just letting you know that the Supreme Court decided today not to look into the case of an illegal gun dealer who was given a longer prison term because the guns were destined for New York City. On that note,
President Obama expressed outrage yesterday at the fatal shooting of a controversial Kansas doctor who performed late-term abortions. Dr. George Tiller was shot to death in the lobby of Reformation Lutheran Church in Wichita as he attended church services yesterday. This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Monday, June 1st, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Steve Nassar. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio station at 90.7 FM. Your support, and your support only, keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, If You Love This Planet, Dr. Caldicott interviews Lynn Eden, author of Whole World on Fire, Organizations, Knowledge, and Nuclear Weapons Devastation.
Sounds terrible. Thanks for listening and have a good day.